This week on the Drag Zine Podcast, we do our 2019 year in review, where I talk about some of the biggest stories of the year, my travels to different events, and a whole lot more. So pull those belts tight. Get ready to put into the beams. The Drag Zine Podcast starts now. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Drag Zine Podcast. I'm your host, Senior Associate Editor Brian Wagner. This week on the show, I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach, kind of give our guests and racers whatnot their ability to take a break and enjoy the holidays. And, you know, I'm just going to go through and kind of touch on a lot of the big stories this year, you know, things I've seen, my travels, my thoughts, and, you know, just a fun little way to tie a big bow on the year. So let's get this party started. And, you know, to kick things off, every year Andrew Wolf puts out his top 10 runs of the year. And it's a really great article that kind of is honestly really hard to write for him and hard for us to come up with, because there's so many amazing performances each year. And even the things that we get that sometimes get left off the honorable mention list are just kind of mind boggling as well. So it's a really, really big bear to kind of try to hug. And he did a very good job this year, and I highly suggest you go through and kind of read through the article. And I'm not going to spoil it, and I'll let you read the article, kind of check out the top 10. Kind of what I'm going to touch on is maybe the things that, you know, weren't the on the list, you know, his honorable mentions and noteworthy performances, which on that list, you know, they're pretty gnarly. You know, we'll kind of start things off there. And one of the ones that he had on that list was Rich Bruder's X275 record at the Sweet 16 2.0 with that 423 at 165. And looking back at the Sweet 16, that was a gnarly event across the board, but especially in X275, because before the event, you know, we do a lot of talking. I had Duck on the show, and we thought the bump would be, you know, maybe low 440s, high 430s. And then as the event kind of unfolded and the records kept dropping, the cars kept getting faster, to make that Sweet 16 clearly was not going to be easy. And you look at some of the big names that didn't even make the show, like Ron Rhodes, who's won at Ducks events before, dominated an X275, didn't even make the main show. And then you have the Titan Super that gets in there, Rob Goss banging it out with everybody as well in his Pro Charge car. And the other thing you got to remember too is the Brooders still didn't have a ton of laps on their new combo before the Sweet 16, so they are still trying to dial it in. And for them to be able to pull that record off was definitely amazing, to say the least. And I think it really speaks to, from my point of view, from what I've seen, the Bruder brothers and how hard they work. Love them or hate them, those guys put in some major, major work, and they find ways to kind of attack the rule book in a different way. And, you know, I feel bad for John Sears for what he has to deal with trying to keep that class in check, you know, and people complain and talk about how thick the rule book is, but it's so hard to keep parity in that class just because of people like the Bruder brothers and John Clavitas and the guys from KBX on what they can come up with, that they find ways to really attack that rule book and do so well. You know, we should have been keeping a list of how many combinations the Bruder brothers have used and had weight thrown at, just for the sheer volume of what they've been able to do. Everything from turbos, centrifugal blowers, the Roots blower deal. The only thing you haven't seen them run is nitrous yet. Now, I'm of the opinion, jokingly aside though, that they are somehow trying to get the nitrous rules to the point where they're going to show up with a car one day and just smash everybody. But again, it's with that rule set in that class and what they're able to do and how they do it, how hard they work, they're very, very smart guys. And as much hate as they catch, and, you know, kind of the back and forth you see online, you cannot deny the fact that 423 is just from hard work. You know, money helps, but it just comes down from hard work. And those guys absolutely grind their combos down to the most granular level to make it happen. Another thing Andrew had on the list was the factory supercar, Drew Skillman's 770 record at the NMCA Bradenton opener. And it's, again, kind of crazy when you look at that, you know, the supercar factory showdown class, how far that's come here recently, where, you know, 7 seconds was just a big deal. And, you know, Jeff Turk set that record. And now all of a sudden, the NHRA and the NMCA are trying to have to come up ways to really reel these cars in. And it's almost a shame, because personally, I'm afraid that you're going to see that class just get even more out of control than it already is, because you're seeing guys dumping pro stock level money and technology into it. And it's kind of making it harder for the little guys. But at the same time, it's truly insane that they're taking these 3,200 pound cars on these tiny tires and going 770s. And we had Leah Pritchett on the show, as a past NHRA champion in the class, talking about how sketchy these cars are to drive on that tiny tire. Mark Powick, same thing. It takes a lot of guts to wheel these cars down the track, because they're making a ton of power and not on a very big tire. And what Skillman did this year with that Cobra Jet, you know, we got to kind of hear more about it at PRI, talking with the guy, Dustin Whipple. Just, they didn't have a lot of time with this new blower combination, and just being able to really absolutely smash it out of the park, deal with the pulley changes, and just keep going was really kind of something that is amazing, in my opinion, that they were able to do that with these cars and still deal with the rules and the teardowns and everything else. And to me, just seeing these cars, they were really one of my favorite classes. If, you know, go to an NMCA race or go to an NHRA race where they're at and watch these cars running heads up with the Cobra Jets, the Dodges, and the Copos, it's really awesome to see just how fast these cars are and how close the racing can be. It's a lot of fun to check out. And, you know, at Norwalk this year, they had the big Copo 50th, and, you know, they also had the Cobra Jets up there. And just seeing what these racers were doing with those cars and how tight they keep it is really kind of awesome to see. And it's going to be interesting, kind of, as more technology is dumped into these cars. And, you know, they're still playing with the tight rules. And you got to remember, the NHRA absolutely tears these cars down often and really scrutinizes what they do. So it's not as open as what you think, and you have to be very smart in how you develop these engines. And then you got people like Holbrook and BES and Barton that just absolutely pour through these engines and try to maximize every square inch that they can, and being able to run as quick as what they can is just, it's mind-boggling to me to see, and just how hard that these cars run. Another thing that Andrew had on his list this year was a Dean Marinus' quarter-mile record of 5:57 in a nitrous car at the Supercharger Showdown. And that, to me, that record's kind of neat to look at, because if you look at the grand scheme of things, a lot of people seem like they are writing nitrous cars off to a certain point. And as parity has tried to pull into the rules, you know, it's hard for rulemakers, again, to make that happen. And these nitrous geniuses and guys like Dean Marinus, Steve Jackson, your Pat Musies, Buck Racing Engines, all these guys, you know, Schweitzer, they find ways to squeak out the power. And a 557 in a nitrous pro mod, that's hauling the mail. Because with a nitrous car, you really have to pack everything in the front half of the track, because you don't have that power adder to help you like a booster car in the back end. So they're kind of running out of wind. So on the front end of the track, you're just smashing this car in the mouth, and you have to really be able to balance all of that power on tap, plus managing it, keeping it to the ground, and bringing in your other kits down track. And it's a fascinating dance to really see these guys rip off passes like that. You know, and Dean being able to go that fast, you know, he's a great guy. Very personable, and it was awesome to see him do so well with that pass. And it's going to be interesting what you'll see maybe at the NHRA level with the rule changes coming in next year and what the nitrous cars are going to do. And the NHRA is really going to be the only quarter mile, you know, pro mod racing left outside of, I believe, the Vegas race at Super Streetcar Nationals. Pretty much everybody else is going eighth mile, but that's another topic we'll get into another day. Speaking of quarter mile pro mod records, you know, Stevie Jackson this year pretty much put his stamp on pro mod front to back with his performances, winning the championship and just really, to steal a word from him, crushing everybody and ripping off a 564 at the Gators that early in the year was impressive. And it just kind of shows what him and his team are really capable of and how versed he is between the different combinations that he's run and kind of how he's made it all work is very fascinating to me. And he's a hard working guy, and he's great with the fans, awesome for the sport. And putting him in a pro mod was a fantastic decision for the team at the NHRA level to have him there, because he stirs the pot. He doesn't play, and he brings it every week, and he talks and he backs it up. So it makes it a lot of fun. Again, rule changes this year in pro mod. Going to be interesting to see how he adapts and if he's going to keep that number one on his card. And he's a very, very competitive guy. So he's going to do everything he can to keep that on his car and really push the pace. Another thing that it was kind of shocking that, you know, and that Andrew didn't put this on the list, but again, it just shows how competitive it is to make that top 10 list, is Tom Bailey's 599 at Drag Week. And if you know Tom, he's a true diehard car guy racer. You look at his car collections, how he does things, and he builds stuff just to go fast, and he loves it. And he really enjoys Drag Week. And a lot of people complain, oh, it's a pro mod on the street. Well, here's the thing. The car's still street legal. It's still driven on the street. And you do 1,000-plus miles and then beat on a car like that, it's not easy. Doesn't matter if it's a pro mod or whatever. The fact that you can street drive that car and lay down a 599 during Drag Week, that's impressive. And if you saw our story on it and kind of saw the video, it was literally a walk-off home run. You know, last pass of the day, last pass of Drag Week, he's been trying for it. They came so close. And when he ripped that off, the place blew up. And it was just really awesome to see. And Dominic D'Amato took an iconic picture of him coming up the return road, waving to the crowd, the 599 on the board. It's like picture-perfect shot. And, you know, it's legit. It wasn't created in Photoshop. He caught that on film. And to have Tom be able to do that is truly, truly amazing. And just how hard he works with that car and how down-to-earth he really is. And just you can genuinely tell that he loves what he does and how he does it. And how hard he works. You know, I remember up at the Shakedown a couple of years ago, him and Steve Morris won Drag Week, won the Unlimited class, and just decided, let's go up to the Shakedown. So they just drove straight through from the award ceremony up to the Shakedown to try to run there, you know, run pro mod in a street car. It's just Tom is hardcore as it comes, and it's going to be very interesting. I think he's got another car in development, so that should be kind of interesting to see what he comes out there and, you know, what he's going to do with it. And it's cool, too, because it gives Steve Morris a very kind of wild test bed to really push his imagination and see what he can do. Now, another record that I got to see this in person that he had on his Andrew's list is a pro street motorcycle rider, Jeremy Tinsley, ran a 642 at the World Cup. Full disclosure, I'm fascinated by motorcycles, would not want to go that fast on a bike. And 642 at the speed that he's going, almost 250 miles an hour, it's insane. Absolutely insane to see those bikes go down the track. That they look like something, you know, it's a boosted leader bike with an extended swing arm, no wheelie bars. You're dumping that clutch and trying to keep this thing kind of under you. And the thing about the World Cup this year was it was cold. Lord, it was cold. And just the atmospheric conditions were there, and it seemed like every round of qualifying and eliminations in that pro street motorcycle class for the XDRA, there was always records falling and something going on. So it was really exciting to see and just watch those guys work those bikes and try to, you know, it's a little bit different when, you know, you're always kind of joke. You can tell a difference when you're walking through the pits between like pro stock motorcycle riders and the Nitro Harley riders. Pro stock motorcycle riders, these street bike riders, they're jockey size. A lot of these guys are smaller individuals. Nitro Harley guys look like Harley dudes, big, burly, gnarly, and you got to be to wrestle these bikes. But even with a pro street motorcycle, you know, bike, you still have to wrestle this thing down the track, and doing that quick and fast, grabbing gears on a boosted bike, to me, hats off to Jeremy. You're doing something that I absolutely love to watch, would never want to do myself. Now, next on the list, we have Matt Bell resetting the limited drag radial record with a 404 at No Mercy. And this is one of those deals where Matt worked hard throughout the year to kind of really work on this class. And the limited drag radial class is, again, one of my favorite heads-up racing classes, just because of the diversity and what Jason Ruckert and Tyler Crossnode have done to kind of keep this class in check. And they've done everything they can to keep it from being a three-second class and keeping, you know, it from becoming another radial versus the world no holds bar. So being able to, you know, the record in that class has hovered in the 4.0s for a little while, and being able to run a 4.04 was pretty wild. Definitely shows what Matt and his team have been able to do throughout the year in a stock wheelbase length Fox Body Mustang and just chipping away at it and doing what they did. And there was a whole lot of more drama to it, because also in play that whole weekend was the Limited Drag Radial Championship, which was won by Jim Howe. So Bell's trying to win a championship, set this record, and it was just, there was so much wrapped around this, and being able to rip that off kind of just kept amping up everything a little bit more, and it made it really kind of neat to see, and just see that their work really paid off. But I think, you know, it's going to pose a very difficult conundrum to Jason and Tyler trying to keep that class from being a 390 class, because these guys, again, you know, it's that theme of working hard at your combination. Now, another racer on the list that ran a 404, but in a different class, was Terry Parks at the Sweet 16 to claim the Leaf Spring record. And his Nova with that Pro Charger, it's a gnarly piece. It's impressive, it's nasty, it's fast. And to go 404 on a set of Leaf Springs, you know, it, no matter how you cut it, yeah, there's a lot of new technology and it's not a true stock Leaf Spring, but still, it really kind of limits how you can get the car down the track. So it's going to pose, again, an interesting kind of battle in the Leaf Spring world, that you have Parks laying this record down, and you have Lyle Barnett and the Tooth Jerker and what they can do with the turbo car. Think of that for a second, that we could have a Leaf Spring car running in possibly the high 3 second range. You say that 5 years ago, people looked like you had two heads. And here we are with the power adders and what these guys are doing, that they're technically capable to do that. It's going to be pretty wild. I'd love to have seen it in person, but unfortunately wasn't able to. Now, Jerry Morguero set the Outlaw 10.5 slick tire record at the World Street Nats with a 386. And there's a little bit of controversy in different camps in the Outlaw 10.5 world, because you got the guys doing it on the radials and the guys doing it on slicks. And for me, Outlaw 10.5 was one of those classes I remember getting to see and thinking, wow, you know, the Outlaw 10.5 freak show. And they're going that fast on a, you know, not a completely open rule book like Radio versus the World on a set of slicks is pretty awesome still to this day. And being able to get a car like that down the track on a slick tire, you know, there's a lot that really goes into it, especially a turbo car like that, trying to kind of keep it between the pipes and be able to have that balance. It's impressive to see. And again, with the limited rules in Outlaw 10.5 compared to Radio versus the World, I enjoy it. I like the class. It's awesome that he went that quick. You know, the overall record is in the 370s, which, you know, Mo Hall got that with a nitrous car. And are you going to see parity between the two? You know, the tire's a limiting factor. You know, it's kind of keep showing that they keep laying down these rules, and racers find ways. Racers are always going to find a way to go fast within the safety and ability of what they can do. And the tires were thought to be a limiting factor, and it's kind of scary that we're not finding the limiting edge on these. And, you know, maybe we'll see a 370 pass on a slick, you know, right conditions, right racer, we'll see. Now, the final kind of record that was an honorable mention on Andrew's list was Joel Granos's H pattern 717 record in the Supra at Orlando World Street Nationals. I got to see this car run up at the World Cup, and let me tell you, it's dirty, nasty, fast. You know, at one point, Jonathan Atkins had the record for a stick shift H pattern car with a 630, and he dropped it by like 3/10, and people lost their minds. And Joel was still trying to kind of shake the car out and get it figured out up at the World Cup, but that, you know, it's, you know, your basic, I say basic, you know, it's your performance 2J build, big turbo. And this car out of the hole is wild. And he had to drive the wheels off this car several times. At one point, it looked like he was going to put it on its lid, but he kept it rubber side down. And just, you could tell that this car had a lot of potential, and they were just trying to figure out the clutch and everything else. And then finally, you know, he got it dialed in at Orlando. I think it went a 720 to start with. And then they blasted off that 717. And there's still a little bit left in this car. There's a distinct possibility we could see a stick shift 6-second car. And that's totally insane with the technology we have and how fast these cars really are and kind of what they do. It's pretty cool to see. So that pretty much wraps up kind of the records that didn't make the top 10. And I really highly suggest you go back through and kind of read through Andrew's article. We got it on our Facebook page, got it on dragzine.com to kind of go through and take a look at all these different records. And, you know, you got a little bit of everything. You got nitro cars, you got some imports on there, heads up cars. I mean, it's definitely a very interesting and comprehensive list. And it's something, it's a big animal to kind of wrestle for sure. So kind of switching gears here a little bit. And one of the cool things about this job is I get to travel to a lot of different events all over the country. The only thing I didn't go to this year, you know, I've mentioned before, is a big money bracket race, but getting to go to Outlaw Heads Up events, No Prep, NHRA events, you know, different local events. It's always really, really cool to kind of just take all these different areas of drag racing. And I went to a streetcar takeover event this year, local heads up racing up at Mile End, just a lot of different stuff. And to me, that's fascinating to get to see just all these different levels of racing. And, you know, I kicked off my year this year at Lights Out, you know, the big daddy of, you know, radial tire racing, kind of kick off the year each year. And Alex Laughlin wins this event. And to me, it's kind of interesting to see how all that unfolds, because Alex, he talks a lot. He talks a lot online, and, you know, he's caught a lot of flack for it. And people seem to think that they have this opinion of him that he's just this spoiled rich kid that gets to drive these race cars, and he doesn't wrench on them, and he's just a seat filler that yanks the steering wheel and grabs gears. You cannot be more wrong. He works on these cars constantly. He's always hustling to have money to go race, you know, finding sponsors, putting the people in the right places to do this and to drive these different cars. You know, it's definitely not an easy task. And he kind of came to the radio world and kind of put people on notice, and being able to do what he did in winning this event was pretty wild to see in that car. And, you know, he appreciates what he did, and having people like Frankie Taylor in his corner and, you know, being able to figure this stuff out was definitely awesome to see. And that car is going to be a threat no matter where it is, what he races it in. As long as they've got some data and keeping it going down the track, you know, it's going to be legit. And he cuts gnarly lights and really runs that car hard. And it's kind of one of those people that's going to be, he's going to be hard to race no matter where you're at, just because, you know, he's going to be on the tree. He's going to hit his shift points and that car's going to be rolling. So there's no gimme against him. And to see kind of how he rolled through that and got it done, it was definitely pretty wild for sure. And kind of overall, the feel for Lights Out, it's a different event. It's got that new year feel to it where all the racers and teams are keyed up and they want to really show what they can do for the year. And you'll see some new cars. There's a lot more fans at this event, and it's wild to watch all of these racers try to figure out what they can do with the track. And, you know, they see different conditions during the day. So it's much as a chess match as a horsepower matchup. So again, if you're, you know, you need to add this to your bucket list. If you're a heads up racer, make it to at least one of these events to check out, because it's definitely worth it for sure. Another cool event that I got to go to this year was the Cavalcade of Stars up at, or not Cavalcade, I'm sorry, the Night of Fire up at Norwalk. And their Night of Fire is, that's an event. What the Bader family does is, it was very interesting to see just the level of attention to detail, all these different racers that they bring together. And it's a show, you know, with the Nitro guys being there, bringing in the big names like, you know, John Force, Robert Height, Caps, all those guys, Cruz Petragon, then Gassers, they got Pro Mods, you know, the Jet Car World Championships was kind of interesting to watch. And I was able to catch probably one of the most interesting, and I guess, you know, for my photography, the most iconic image I've caught so far was Bob Oates burning that site down, that sign down. And to kind of give the backstory about that picture, right before they started, you know, finishing up all of the finals of the races, they put on a big fireworks show. They got a lot of pyro up. So along the wall, they put some pyro up, and kind of the photographers, they backed us off the wall. So we weren't able to get some of the shots we were able to normally get. And in the back of my mind, you know, they had this pyro up all along the track, and you got to keep in mind where it's at, and we don't know when it's going to go off. So when they brought out Bob to burn down the sign, I was trying to get into a position where I could get the shot safely and, you know, not get set on fire by pyro on the wall and still get the shot and, you know, still trying to be safe around this giant jet truck, which, if you've never seen Bob's truck in person, it doesn't matter where you stand around this thing, it puts off heat. You know, in front of it, behind it, sideways, it's going to get your attention. And I'd never seen him burn down the sign before. And when he started laying into it and hitting it with the afterburner, that thing got up, I laid on the shutter of my camera and just started snapping images. Just to try to, like, different angles up, down, just to kind of try to catch the enormity of what was happening. It was kind of wild. You know, the crowd screaming, going crazy. There's 40 plus thousand people here. And just that whole scene, and this, the sign's on fire, he's, you know, still hitting the afterburner. And I don't think anybody really was prepared for the level of fire that sign was about to go through, because, you know, it caught it, but then it really kind of started to keep catching on fire, and it's raining ash down, there's fire everywhere, the sign's still going up, rips down the track, people are going crazy. Well, the other cool thing that, you know, after all that happened, is that at the Night Under Fire, they bring the people up down to the track, they bring the cars up, you can talk to them beyond the track, and it's like pandemonium. There's 1,000 people around these cars on the track, the signs on fire, the fire department's there. It was a truly wild scene to check out. And, you know, it shows that in this day and age, promoters like the Bader family and others, you need to put on a show. You put on a show, you'll put people in the seats. That's what, you know, kind of people want to see, racers want to see. What, you know, the racers want to be a part of, I should say. They want to race in front of big crowds. People want to be entertained. And in our short attention span these days, that's what you need to do. And the Baders have kind of captured that event amongst, you know, kind of other things that they do. Another cool event I got to go to was Outlaw Armageddon. And usually with no prep races, they kind of change things up. Or usually with no prep races, it's, you know, run off the trailer, lose, go home kind of deal, chip draws on who you race. Well, this year, they changed things up, and they did like this round-robin pool kind of deal, which was awesome because it added so much additional kind of drama to it. Basically, you had to have a winning record. Basically, they had three rounds that you almost had to go undefeated to make it into the main event. And you see on the internet people all the time accuse no prep racing and this, that. Anything where the Street Outlaws are there, it's rigged. It's rigged. Folks, I can tell you without a doubt, it is not rigged. the racing is as real as it gets. And this event really kind of spoke to that, because the racers that made the main event, Art Larmageddon, and mind you, you have Big Chief, Murder Nova, Monza was there, Doc was there. And the only guy from the show to make it into the main event was, of all people, Dominator. He caught some luck, he made it in. And then in the final, it was Caleb Morton against the guy that drives a probe. And it was wild to see kind of all that unfold. And it really kind of, the whole vibe behind No Prep Racing, if you've never been, is it is very much like, you see all those pictures like the 70s when, you know, drag racing was huge and there's people everywhere. That's what No Prep Racing is. It's really an outlaw vibe where people root for their favorite racers, and it's really kind of awesome to see. It's enjoyable, and I really suggest trying to go to any big, you know, No Prep Race, even a local No Prep Race. Just support the local scene is something you really want to do. Another event that I went to this year was the U.S. Nationals. And to kind of describe that event as the big go, and that is the biggest drag race of the year overall, hands down, just the prestige behind it. You know, you got all the sportsman racers running for class. Just to win at Indy is important and huge. And to be there to kind of to capture it was different than being there as a spectator, because you get more of a raw feel for the amount of pressure that's there, you know, seeing everything that happens. You know, the Hemi shootout that weekend with the Super Stockers is awesome to see. Just the whole event just has a totally different feel than most NHRA races you go to, and it lives up to the hype, in my opinion. Well worth going to, and just you get to see things there you normally don't see at events. Was there, got to see, you know, unfortunately, Warren Johnson wad up the Camaro, and that was kind of a surreal moment to watch him lose the handle on it. Everybody's screaming, oh no, oh no, and it just, you know, he parked it in the wall, but it added another layer to it. But it was really a cool event to check out. You know, I got to go to No Mercy again, another awesome race, you know, down at South Georgia, and see kind of, again, it's a different feel for that race because it's kind of towards the end of the year, and the racers, there's maybe not as many there because it's, you know, it's a long year to run a heads up car hard. And seeing kind of Stevie win and how he reacted in Radio Versus the World, you know, in the winner's circle, you know, he gave a speech about how happy he was, how blessed he was, talking with the fans, laughing, just having a good time. And again, you see he loves and enjoys what he does. You know, it's something he's all about. And it really shows in how he kind of approaches the event. Then, of course, I mentioned earlier that I went to the World Cup Finals, and just that event is something I tell people to go to just because it is an event. I've never seen that many people at a drag race at one time. And the variety and level of cars that you see there, even if you're not an import fan, which I understand it's not for everybody, the impressive nature of the imports you see at that event makes it worth going to, and how hard these teams work, and just the level, again, of cars you see and the records that get set. And, you know, where else are you going to see, you know, a 2JZ-powered Toyota Tacoma truck, you know, running, you know, in the 7-second zone? It's something you're not going to see a lot of, and just you get to see cars that you normally won't get to see at other events because they might only run in certain parts of the country. And one of the cool things we got to see was Giddy Chamati set the GTR record. And Giddy is a great guy. I've interviewed him before, just talking with him, and he loves racing. And they were coming to this event to set the record. He was not worried about winning the event. He wanted to retake that GTR record, and being able to run that 656 that he ran, and just the smile on his face afterward was so cool to see. And he knew he came there and mission accomplished. He felt awesome about it. And that car going down the track is something that you probably wouldn't expect. Because you hear all-wheel drive, you think it's going to be an easy mark to make down the track. No. He's inside fighting this car tooth and nail because of the level of power it's making. It's just trying to go every which way but straight. So it was kind of fun to see him set that record and make it happen. And then, you know, you had Edwin Burgos set the rotary record, and just the level of happiness and excitement from that team in the pits, you know, that didn't matter if they won a round. They just, that record to them meant everything. And then Carlos Daud, with, at the time he set the four cylinder record kind of out of nowhere, people love that. And he was super happy, and being able to do that with that impressive of a vehicle was kind of wild to see. And, you know, Bill Lutz chasing after records on a 275 radial. That event, like I said, it's just people coming out to swing for the fences. And that's what makes it that much more interesting to kind of check out and see. So that was kind of, you know, my travels and what I got to do this year, and kind of a little bit behind the scenes, you know. And I love to talk to people about it. And if you ever see me at the track and have any questions, or, you know, want to maybe know a little bit more about what it's like to see racing from behind the lens or behind the pen, you know, don't be afraid to stop by and, you know, hit me up. Now, I'd like to kind of touch on a few of the bigger stories we had this year. And the biggest story of 2019, you know, for us, view-wise, was Ryan Martin's new car that he unveiled at PRI. And it really speaks volumes to how far the Street Outlaw still moved the needle and how much people are really, really into it. Honestly, I don't think we really expected that story to take off to that level, but people are just, they wanted to know more. And the line around the booth, to just people looking at the car, was amazing. So that was something that I don't think any of us really, really expected to see, but the craftsmanship on that car was definitely, you know, it warranted that kind of unveil. And at the same time, then you have, you know, Larry Larson with his ATS that he unveiled this year. And there's a picture that Larry and I were talking about that showed his car versus a stock ATS nose to nose. And it's insane the lengths that Larry went to make that car still look stock. Truly awesome to see. And the level of detail, again, that he put into that car was kind of wild. Another big story this year that we kind of saw was the face palm around the world. You know, Steve Torrence and Cameron kind of, you know, their little dust up at the top end, and very, very polarizing. Some people hated it. Some people loved it. It painted, you know, Steve kind of got booed. Cameron got cheered. Me personally, you know, I never talked to Steve before. I've talked with Cameron, worked with him many times, but I don't have a problem with it. You know, should every racer do it? Absolutely not. You know, it's been done before. You know, John Force, you know, Tony Petragon, you know, their little dust up. There's been fights in the pits. It's happened in the past, people. Deal with it. I hate to say it. Is it right? No. Should everybody do it? No. You know, I saw people chiming off on social media, oh, if a sportsman racer did this, it'd be the end of the world. Yeah, you don't do it, but it happens. And in this, you know, at that level, when there's that much emotion on the line, it's, you know, when you have a championship like that, it's, you know, there's a lot of adrenaline flow, and it's hard to say what was said. You know, we don't know what was said at the top end. But again, I, you know, should it have been done? No. But to me, it really is going to put, going forward, some interesting spin on any time those two line up together. Guess what? People are going to watch. They're going to talk about it. If they're on the same side of the ladder, they're going to talk about it. You know, Steve's got that image now of, you know, the bad boy that, you know, did he get away with something? You know, who knows? But the other thing you got to remember, too, is that in the dirt track world, that would barely be considered a dust up. You know, I've seen some pretty gnarly fights at dirt track races. So, again, you know, it was a whole lot of hoopla. Should it have been done? No. But it's not the end of the world. And drag racing, in my opinion, needs some more controversy. It needs less corporate and more people doing, you know, things to get underneath each other's skin. You know, it's, again, is it, should it be fist fights? No. But, you know, when you're trying to fund these cars and you're having to be a certain level of corporate, it kind of takes a little bit of the edge off it to a certain point. So who knows? Maybe we'll get to see some people talk a little bit more trash next year based around this. Maybe they'll loosen up a little bit more. Who knows? But, you know, I think that's really kind of some of the bigger stories of the year and my thoughts on them. And, you know, you can go through and check out everything we've got on Dragzine. We've been running this week some of our best of 2019. So you can see some of the crashes, the crazy stories and everything else. And, you know, really looking forward to a 2020. So thanks again for kind of listening to me ramble and rant this week. And next week we'll be back to our normal time of talking to different people around the drag racing world and get their thoughts and feelings on things. So as always, may your reaction times be crisp and your win lights bright. See you in 2020, folks.